I'm delighted. We've got there eventually. We had a few little technical hiccups, but we're not going to worry about that as we speak to Ruta Lee. Good afternoon to you, Ruta, or good morning to you. How are you?
Very good morning to you too, and I realize it's cocktail hour for you.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, Ruta.
At all times, Dave, at all times.
Great to have you on.
I'm so happy to be with you. Thank you for sharing your audience and your time and your interest with me. God bless you. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. You really are. And the book looks fantastic, by the way, and it's available on our website, tre.radio. And if you want to order yourself a copy of the book. Was it fun writing the book, Ruta, going back over the old days?
Well, it's also very painful because there are so many in life, and the worst thing about writing a book is editing it and taking things out and then all of a sudden saying, oh my God, I forgot to talk about that. Why did I take that? But that's the way it goes, and I'm blessed that I got it out. And so now, along with actress, singer, dancer, performer, salesperson, I can now add authoress, and I'm so proud of myself that I actually did it. It only took me about 10 years.
Brilliant. I mean, did you enjoy, there must have been some great moments to look back on as well, so it must have been quite nice to kind of look back on it.
Wonderful fun, and the great fun is that most of my readers, the audience, are enjoying it. And what I have found from most people who have read the book is that they say something that is music to my ears, which is that reading it was like sitting down and having a cup of martini or something with me and just schmoozing about, the crazy, wonderful things in my past that I was so happy to share with everybody. And It's I admire anybody who can sit down and do a book. I find it to be a very difficult thing to do. First of all, I don't type. I failed typing four times in my high school, and they finally kicked me out and said, go take shop.
Well, you know what? It's worked out okay for you anyway, I think. So that's good. When did you actually think, you know what, this is what I want to do. I want to act. I want to be a performing artist. I want to be in show business.
Dave, I think I did that the minute I came out of my mother's womb.
Yeah.
She tells me that I was always a precocious child and that I was always, there wasn't a stranger to me in the world. I loved and kissed everybody that I met. And so what else would I do but go into show business?
I've got a son like that.
It was very interesting because, Dave, my parents were from Lithuania, Lithuanian-born peasants. My mother carried her shoes to church because they had to be passed down to the next girl and the next girl and the next girl. They were as poor as church mice, you know?
Yeah.
And yet, when they got to first Canada, God bless Canada, and then to America, where they knew the streets were paved with gold, they did everything. They lived the American dream, whether it's North America or South America, the American dream.
Yeah. And what point did you say, think in your life, I've arrived now, this is the kind of the breakthrough I wanted? There's a lot more in the book, by the way, dear listener. It's just because of time I wanted to get to some of the points. But when did you think, actually, this is amazing, I'm doing this for a living, I'm making money out of this?
That was my first movie. Not my first television job, which was pretty good, too, working with the fabulous Burns and Allen. But my first movie, which was Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, and it has become an international classic.
Absolutely.
In fact, it was one of the things that helped me to get into the Soviet Union and get permission from Khrushchev to get my grandmother first out of Siberia, then out of Lithuania. But all that's in the book.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
And so I won't bore you with it now. But the stories are quite wonderful. And I just so appreciated that on my way back from the Soviet Union with my grandmother, we had to stop and stay overnight in London. And, of course, any city that has 15 or 16 daily newspapers is pretty friggin' civilized, as far as I'm concerned. And the reception that we got from the press and the headlines everywhere in the world with my little grandmother. And there she would look at one picture and go, oh, no, 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 no. And this one, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
And she'd say, and I'd say, why no, no, no? And she said, because I don't have teeth and you can see in that one when I'm smiling. I don't like that one. That's where my show business gene came from.
Did you come to the, we're broadcasting from Spain, but I'm British and we have a big British audience. Did you ever come to the UK or to Spain much in your career?
Oh, Lord, not necessarily in my career, but in my life, yes. I adore London, and I think Spain is absolutely magnificent. Of course, it's very similar to Southern California.
It is.
You know, the climate-wise and attitude and the whole Spanish mi casa, su casa.
Yes.
The thing is, I think, extraordinary, and the hospitality one feels in Spain is gorgeous. And, of course, as far as I'm concerned, the Brits are the best people on the face of this earth.
No, you're talking my language.
The people that gave the Americans the sense of humor, which I'm so frantically worried that we're losing, you know. Everything is so frigging politically correct. Oh, please.
I know. I'm with you, Ruth. I mean, basically, everybody's so entrenched in opinions nowadays. And everybody's getting offended all the time, aren't they?
That's the problem. Whatever happened to being able to laugh at ourselves and our idiosyncrasies, if we're Italian or Lithuanian or Russian or Polish or Jewish or whatever? There was great humor, and we had comics that were able to use great humor and our craziness without four-letter words that just permeate everything right now.
Ruta, you're talking my kind of language here. You know, the old-fashioned thing, you know, just be nice to people. Just be nice. I just don't know what's happening
to that.
Just
be nice is right. And, you know, I learned a lot from my best girlfriend, Debbie Reynolds, of course, because we headed up a major charity for mental health. It was Hollywood for Mental Health, the Thalian.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from Frank Sinatra about generosity. Both of these people are the most generous people I've known in my life.
I'm going to ask you that. I heard a story about Frank. I'm a big Frank Sinatra fan. I'm going to ask you about that in a minute. But I heard a story. I interviewed the guy who was the warm-up act for Frank in the 80s and 90s. And he was driving Frank out one day, and there was a guy who banged on the door of Frank Sinatra's car as he was leaving a concert venue. And he said, you know, Frank, I've not got much money, but I'm a massive fan of yours. And Frank gave him the watch that was on his wrist and said, go, you know, and it gave him a note saying that it was owned by Frank Sinatra. He said, go and sell that watch and spend it on your family. And to me, that was like, wow, you know, just amazing.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
He was exceedingly generous. He was also very quick to anger. You know, he was mercurial that way. But he was wonderful with his fans, always wonderful, until he was trying to put a fork full of spaghetti in his mouth and somebody would grab his arm and hand and put it down on the table and say, Frank, I'm a fan. I'm from, you know, blah, blah. I'm from New Jersey, where you're from. And that would piss him off, needless to say.
I saw an interview with you, and you were on YouTube, and you were talking about the first time you saw Frank Sinatra live. I mean, what was that like?
Oh, I don't know if you've seen him, Frank.
No, I haven't.
Dave.
I'd love to have seen him. I've seen Tony Bennett.
Oh, my dear. Yeah. Well, I was too young to know anything about him when he was the rage in, at the Paramount Theater and girls, little teenagers, were fainting in the aisles and screaming.
Yeah, the Bobby Sox.
Way too young for that, but I had heard all those wonderful recordings of those unrequited love songs that only he can do that way. And I was invited to his opening night at the Macombo Theater in Los Angeles. All nightclubs were not doing well because television had come in the 50s and the late 50s and the early 60s, and all nightclub business went down the toilet, you know.
Yeah.
And anyway, he told Mary Morrison, who now, the widow that owned the Macombo, that he would come in and play a week. Dean Martin would come in and play a week. Sammy would play a week. Vic Damone would come in and play a week and get business rolling. And fortunately, I had been invited by a wonderful man to see the opening night. And we were at a table of about 12, and his orchestra, Frank's orchestra, filled the entire stage because nice club stages are small. And he was working on a tiny little dais in front of them. and I was sitting directly under him looking up. Well, I've got to tell you, Dave, nobody is as mesmerizing as Frank Sinatra was.
Wow.
And I sat there with my mouth hanging open, and a note came to the table after the performance asking our host to bring me over to the table to meet him and his wife.
Wow.
And we went over, and he said, hello, my name is Arthur Hornblow, Jr. This is my wife. I'm a producer, and I'm doing a film right now that's called Witness for the Prosecution. And I have just given you, young lady, the most unique screen test imaginable. I am sitting around behind Frank Sinatra, so I watched you watch Frank Sinatra, and I think you would make a very good love interest for Tyrone Power in my movie.
Wow.
Will you come in and meet Billy Wilder? And when I caught my breath, I said, is tomorrow too soon? And in I went, and I was put on film by Billy Wilder.
Yeah.
And Marlena Dietrich in the rushes that night said, no, Nick, nine, forget it. She's blonde like I am, and I immediately became a brunette. Isn't that a wild and wonderful story?
Yeah, amazing.
But then, what's even more amazing is that Frank Sinatra liked nothing more than having people at his house for a big Italian supper and running a new movie. And what's the new movie that they're running about a year later? Witness for the Prosecution.
Yes.
And he looks at a producer friend of mine, Howard Koch, and said, you know, I've been watching this Rudy Lee chick on a lot of television stuff. She's pretty cute. What do you say we put her in one of our upcoming movies? And Howard, that I had worked for many times at Warner Brothers, said, absolutely one of my favorites. You couldn't have picked better. And Frank Sinatra never knew that I got the job in Witness because of him. And now, thanks to him, I was getting to be his leading lady in Sergeant's Three. So, boy, talk about serendipity or God's blessings either way.
Yeah. Was it like working with Frank?
I've never had so much fun in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally was peeing my pants through most of the thing because it was one laugh after another. Frank was kind of the leader of the pack, but Dean Martin is without a doubt one of the funniest people God ever put on this earth.
I love him.
And along with, you know, Sammy Davis being the wonderful clown that he is, oh, God, what laughs. And many, many trips to Vegas. Every week we went down for Frank's opening or Frank's closing because they had worked out a deal that they would make the movie, but each one of them would play a week down at the Sands in Vegas.
Yeah.
So I really felt sorry for John Sturges, who was our director, because he had to work around missing people all the time.
You mentioned Dean Martin there, and I thought he was just himself, wasn't he? You know, such a confident guy, and people loved him all up and down the UK, still do to this very day. Just love listening to Dean Martin. You know, and for me, in many ways, I love Frank, but Dean for me is the one. You know, fantastic. But he
also was a very kind man.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we all had nicknames. Frank was the Pope, and Dean was Drunky.
Drunky Dean.
And I was Loudy. and let me tell you why he called me Loudy.
Yes.
I have never been blessed with a lovely bosom size. I've always said Twiggy and I are about the same.
Yeah.
And Dean said, God didn't give Ruta a pair of breasts. He gave her a set of speakers.
I'm not commenting on that. I don't know you enough, Ruta. I've come over all unnecessary. Anyway, we're running quickly out of time, and I'm going to play a bit of Frank to take us out this hour, Ruta. But there's so much in the book. Johnny Carson, Fred Astaire, Robin Williams, Howard Keel, of course. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Just brilliant. And so much in there. The book's called Consider Your Ass Kissed. It's a treasure trove of wonderful stories. Ruta, thank you for joining us here in Spain on Talk Radio Europe. If there was one thing that one memory that you think that was one of the most memorable moments of my career, you probably already mentioned it, but is there anything else that sticks out?
Well, but there are so many.
Yeah, I know. I'm asking you a really difficult.
That's sort of hard to say. Yeah. But let's face it, being on a set with Fred Astaire and Audrey Hepburn was
pretty good going.
Pretty wonderful.
Rita, I'm very jealous. Yeah.
Me too. I'm jealous of myself, and I wish I could live it all over again because I was a jerk and didn't keep the little cards and memento things that I should have kept. But that's all right. I still have happy, beautiful memories.
And still many more to come.
So I thank you so much, Dave. What a pleasure to meet you, at least electronically, and hopefully I can meet you in person.
That would be lovely.
And we can have a cup of gin or something together.
I'll come over California way one time and say hello.
Please do. Yeah. You have my number. Call me. I will be delighted.
Lovely. Ruta, thank you. Such a blessing. Really appreciate that time with you. And all the best. And make some more memories, Ruta. Many more to come.